From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of October, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And then we'll discuss the global agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. You know, we've been following wheat closely in some of the growing regions across the planet. In fact, most of them are in trouble. We'll take that up and we'll hear more about the slide of this cooler weather across the Corn Belt, what that'll mean next week, and for the longer term as well. And of course, Eric will put it all in really easy to understand terminology across the board right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today up 3 cents. It settled at 419 and a quarter. The March at 420 and a quarter, two higher. In July up one at 420 and a quarter. Next year's December 2.5 lower at $3.94. November beans, $10.83 and three quarters, a dime higher. January up 8 3/4 at $10.81. And the July at $10.59 and three quarters up four. November beans of next year, $9.82 and three quarters, a quarter higher. Bean oil, 42 cents higher. The bean meal up 4 cents for the day. Wheat futures, soft red July and nickel higher. The hard red up 7 1/4. And the live cattle futures finished the December a dime higher. The November feeders were down 77.5 cents. And lean hogs on the day at 82.5 cents higher. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Happy Friday, Todd. Winter has come at last, I think.
Yeah, it's sliding through today here. I think you got it earlier, and I guess it's going to stay cold now. I can't call 40s and 50s cold yet, but it's coming. Fall certainly arrived, that's for sure, and the cold weather is going to come, especially if you're in the northern plains. We'll say the winter has arrived there. How cold are you?
Yeah, we're in the 40s, but I think, you know, from a market perspective, we're actually going to see a hard freeze tonight. 27 is predicted out in Hutchinson, Kansas, the heart of the hard red wheat belt. And that looks like it's going to stay in the majority of the hard red wheat belt all the way to the Oklahoma border. And so that's something that I think we'll probably trade Sunday night, because as we come back from the weekend, we'll have a hard freeze and then expectations for a nice blanket of snow. So if we get a hard freeze, we better get a nice blanket of snow, or we're going to have a really scruffy looking wheat crop in this part of the country as come spring.
It'll join the rest of the planet, I guess, according to the meteorologist, right?
Yeah, Argentina's crop reduced this week by Buenos Aires Exchange. That really helped turn the tide after Thursday's break and test of major support in the soft red and the hard red crop. And even Russia taking on the Egyptian purchases on Friday for the tender. Still good news overall to the market that Egypt is still buying, even at these price levels. So we were able to erode the Thursday weekly export sales number, which was negative for wheat, but very positive for row crops. And I think, quite frankly, with wheat coming around technically and some of these new fundamentals you and I just talked about, we saw the wheat lead the market again, and the corn and beans, you kind of took the chain off the dog at that point.
Yeah, wheat leading, and it's but around, I think, yesterday, the Commodity Week crew mentioned 6-year highs for wheat. Corn and soybeans are making highs, but not that big of a number, that's for sure. So this thing's,
yeah,
this thing's really beginning to run. Speaking of corn and soybeans, soybeans right behind it, and those numbers look good. They thrashed things today.
Well, and this is where, you know, the sell and defend model that you and I have been talking about for about a month and a half or 2 months now, if memory serves me right, is really something to think about if you're a producer in a situation where you just don't know how high is. And yet, by the same token, you have a weather shift coming, potentially a pattern shift in South America. You have a major election in the United States that could affect energy policy. And you have just the sheer technical side of the equation. And then you throw on top of that U.S.-China trade relationship. These are four big issues, along COVID being the fifth issue. All of them interrelated. And all of them, like the backflowing of the supply problems that we've seen in major countries, that has encouraged more demand. And COVID has encouraged probably more demand and extra demand buying. We think South Korea and Mexico are doing that right now. possibly China is doing that as well. I think probably China is doing that as well. So what I'm getting at is that sell and defend model, the soybeans were able to clear the January 2017 resistance on a closing basis on Friday, closing above 1080. That opens you all the way up to a July 2016 monthly high of 1176.5. So how do you trade that? Well, it's pretty simple to me. You get the puts, you put the floors underneath you, especially if you've got a lot of 20 soybeans sold. Get some nearby January or March puts bought and have those in place heading into the election, heading into the January report in the case of March puts. And just keep your floor underneath you and see what the weather does, because if we are going to get to 1176.5, we need wheat on our side and we need weather on our side. And I think that's where, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but I think producers are yearning for some simplification of a crazy, historically volatile market.
It has been a wild market. Anything for the corn producers?
Yeah, the corn producers, I think we're in line and on target with the last time we spoke. I spoke about how it looked the best as of the three big commodities in terms of storable and cash-led markets, and probably the most underpinned. China coming out with a new potential tariff rate quota increase on corn imports is nothing but good news, and it makes more sense why they are at a 965, 970 per bushel price in their futures over at the Dalian Exchange. So I think corn continues to be the ultimate leader to the upside. And I think this is where going into the January USDA final report, I'm still looking for a reduced production number here in the United States, reduced supply numbers in China, which you and I talked about on the last commodity week as well.
Hey, why is the tariff on imported corn into China good news?
Well, because they're going to increase it, because they've already hit, I believe they've already hit about 6.8 million tons of imports, and their TRQ right now is 7.2, and that's a standard number they've had for several years, if I remember correctly. But they're probably going to increase that because they're going to need more than 7.2, and that came out. That was an exclusive from Reuters. We'll see what happens as far as that being confirmed by other news sources.
I suppose they're trying to protect price inside China to make sure corn producers continue to plant corn next year.
No, I think what they're trying to do is by increasing the TRQ, that it allows them to increase the volume of imports coming in. And that starts to make a lot more sense, because I just don't think they have the supplies over there that we thought they did, and meaning the USDA and the official government numbers do. So it seems like more things are adding up. And I think, again, looking at South America, we can probably save the bean crop for the most part in Argentina and Brazil if we get a pattern change, but there's a lot of damage probably already done in both countries when it comes to second crop Brazilian corn and the Argentine corn crop, because their first corn typically starts to pollinate next month. So this is kind of where we're at with, there's less competition on the horizon for corn farther out, and I think that maybe is why China is coming in and adding to their potential volume of imports.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, the weather's changing and the fall harvest is going to get a lot tougher. Now, stay safe out in the field. Make sure you get 8 hours of sleep each and every night. Take a 20-minute nap in the afternoon. Why not right now, in fact? Just shut the equipment off. If you fall asleep during the closing market report, that's fine. You can come back to the website later, willag.org, and listen to the end of it. No big deal. It is a big deal, however, that you stay safe. And one of the ways to do that is to stay fresh. Take that nap, and you'll be good to go for the rest of the afternoon and into the evening hours. The other thing is to mask up. I've been telling you this for a while. COVID-19, if you happen to catch it, can tag you pretty hard, even at home, usually about 3 weeks, and you get really, really tired. Just something you can't afford to do. Risk management is what you do as part and parcel of the farming operations. Don't forget about that one. On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible to talk about the weather forecast. Thanks, Eric, for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about near-term patterns first. Maybe we should start with the snow and the cold in the Northwest.
Yeah, it was certainly a week where we saw the arrival of winter. I was talking to some of my friends in Canada, and they're talking about having temperatures that are very reminiscent of like mid-February. We've let a lot of that cold air out across the northern tier of the United States as well. So from Montana through parts of the Dakotas over to Minnesota and Wisconsin, we've now got a pretty good blanket of snow down. And that even includes that interesting shot of snow early in the week that went through parts of Nebraska, right across eventually in central Iowa, like Des Moines to Cedar Rapids, where some places got like 9 inches of snow in a narrow band. And so it feels as though winter has really made its arrival here in that part of the country. And we do have a pretty powerful front that's slowly moving its way through the midsection of the U.S., which is what's given the chance for rain today across the state of Illinois. So we have some much colder air on the backside of it, and it is going to go run north-south right across the United States, getting that cold air all the way down deep into Texas. And sometimes, just to let you know this, the temperatures compared to normal are up to 40 degrees colder than normal at times behind these cold fronts that are sweeping through. So yeah, this is it's another one of those years where it feels like we just went from one season straight to the next and skipped the in-between one.
Yeah, well, that slide, you can feel it happening today, man.
Yeah.
It started tonight. This morning was really nice. I walked early this morning, sunshine, blue skies. It was clear out, and she turned gray, and it's going to get cold pretty fast, I think. So I do have some questions about that, because we have harvest left to happen, not only here in Illinois, but in the rest of the Corn Belt as well. And then there's some fall field work that needs to take place, and farmers would like to have better conditions than not to pull that off. What do you see?
Yeah, well, the better conditions are going to have to start with actually giving us a little bit of moisture, right? We've been very, very dry around here. So we do need some moisture coming in. And yeah, there's some rain spreading across the state today. But then as the week goes on, we are going to be seeing better chances of seeing some precipitation throughout the next week as well. Now, with that, we also need to get those soil temperatures down a little bit. And we're starting to get our early morning 4-inch soil temperatures down there in the right range. So getting there close to that 50-degree mark. But with the recent warm-ups we've had, like yesterday, Thursday, hitting low 80s, you know, that's going to really crank those temperatures back up. Well, with the changes we just discussed, it's going to become, I think, a better situation, especially than what we had in 18 and 19, to actually get some of that fall application on. And so I think we're going to have a nice window that's going to open up here where the temperatures are going to behave. And I think we're going to have the right amount of moisture, not too much and not too little, to hopefully get that kind of field work done as we finish this month of October and start to get into November.
On that too little note, I've been concentrating on wheat and lots of growing regions across the planet, because it's just not fared very well in 2020, and it looks like that's going to continue, or at least has for a while, especially in our hard red winter wheat growing regions. What do we know about the southern plains at this time?
Well, they've been extremely dry, as you know. In some places in the southern plains, I can find up to 60 days that it's been since there's been precipitation. So we have a very unique thing happening right now in the atmosphere, and that sweeping through the Pacific Northwest today is a trough that's actually going to become cut off. So you can just imagine the whole flow of the jet stream, you know, it meanders north and south. Well, occasionally, kind of like a river does, it pinches off a piece of it, and it kind of just sits off to the side. That's what's going to happen. And that's going to go through Nevada, eventually to Arizona, New Mexico, and then emerge in the southern plains, bringing them the first real chance of precipitation I've seen in a while. And you are right. Hard red winter wheat around the world has been hit hard, right? The Black Sea region, just the eastern side of Ukraine, the southern Russian wheat belt. We're talking there about regions that have received between 5 and 20% of normal rainfall for the last couple of months. And then don't forget, we had a hard freeze event, a late one, in Argentina, and we're getting reports that it really damaged their wheat crop there as well. That'd be the same as us getting a really nasty freeze in like Kansas in April. And so this has been a season here where the last couple of months has really hit winter wheat across the world.
Yeah, I know you've been watching South America in general. Anything else that we should be worried about or of note? I'm guessing that is the case.
Yeah, so South America, of course, has been very dry. We've, of course, delayed the planting, and I think most people listening in on this know that the delays there are putting them at the slowest pace looking back, gosh, about 10 years. So the rains are now coming on with a vengeance. We're going to be getting quite a bit of precipitation here in the next 10 to 20 days, and it's going to be very wet across Brazil's northern growing region, including Mato Grosso, well, it's going to go over dry in southern Brazil and at times in parts of Argentina. Now, as we think about that, the heavy rains coming in, I had a good talk with some folks about what that's going to mean. I said, is that going to slow them down? And he said, you know what, the way the rain is timed with it coming so late in the afternoon, they do a bunch of field work in the morning, the rain comes in, and by the next morning, it's already drained and they go again. So the only problem would be if we have a day-long rainfall event. And I do see some of that happening, but the damage has kind of been done here. And I think the bigger picture is, as this bean crop goes in, how delayed is it going to be coming out in January and February? And that's going to be critical. So I'll tell you one thing I'm studying this week, and I hope we get to talk about next week, okay? I'm studying what makes for dry Aprils in Brazil, because that's normally a month where the monsoon's slowing down, and it's usually done by May. But if they get normal monsoonal rains in April, they finish their safrinha corn really well. Well, there have been years where, because of certain factors, La Niña being one of them, that if the if things are not normal and they're dry, it hammers on those yields for the safrinha corn. And I think that's something you and I should start talking about now. So we got a nice, 7-month lead up to when it actually happens.
I love it. We'll have a 7-month lead and then we can say we were right. But if we're wrong, we just won't talk about it.
Sounds good. You're ready to become a meteorologist there, Todd. You got it down.
Hey, thank you so much. Before I go, have you thought about what the winter looks like here in the United States?
Yeah, we've been putting a lot of things together. And to be honest, La Niña seems to dominate the picture. And at that point, I really echo kind of what the National Weather Service is showing now. And that is cool across the northern tier of the U.S., a lot of clipper systems, probably warmth and drought across the southern part of the U.S., which is something I don't want to have to be talking about. Here's the thing, though. La Niña is only one part of the whole flow. The things that we can't forecast that are long-term, but just can't, they're sub-seasonal, would be like fluctuations in the polar vortex, and you know what that does. Things like the East Pacific Oscillation and the North Atlantic Oscillation, and all those two words mean here, those phrases just mean how wavy the jet stream gets at certain times. Because often what defines a winter is those one-off events that really come through and change things. But the good news is that temperatures this winter, I do expect them to get cold, which is what we need. And also, I don't anticipate across the Corn Belt there to be any wintertime drought issues that we're going to be worried about for spring. Now, that is not the case for California, the four corners of the Southern Plains. It's just the Corn Belt. I'm not worried about drought surviving winter.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like, right there on our website at WILLAG.org. Just click and play from the website, in fact, if you'd like. Or if you prefer to use a podcast application, just keep scrolling down and you'll find links to places like Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, and Google Play, as well as Apple Podcasts. Spotify, too, right there at WILLAG.org. Now, yesterday afternoon, we recorded our Commodity Week program. It was a good discussion, a lot about wheat, but how it plays into the overall markets for both corn and soybeans, and why that discussion is a big deal as it relates to acreage. We were joined by Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, along with Mark Rossell, who's a merchandising manager, soft wheat, for the Andersons Trading Office. He's out of Overland Park, Kansas. We started, as usual, by getting a list of items to discuss for the day. Here's Dave Chatterton.
Hey, Todd, and thanks for having me. Plenty to talk about here in the markets. I think we, you know, South American weather is something that's important. The biggest issue of the day, I think, is demand, and particularly export demand. And finally, probably what's changed in this market. If you look at what's happened, and, you know, since that August crop report, which is, you know, not even 8 weeks ago, more like 7 weeks ago, we've had a dollar rally in corn, give or take, $2 in beans, and we've set, you know, we're sitting here at a 6-year high in soft red wheat futures, a 2-year high in soybeans, and a 1-year high in corn. So obviously a lot of things have changed. I think there's four important factors there. One is the August drought. Secondly would be the derecho. Third would be the uptick or dramatic uptick in Chinese demand. And fourth would be the South American weather. And so the question is, how do we balance this out? Where do we go from here? And I guess the question of the day from a producer's mind is how high is high, and where do prices actually go from here?
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, anything to add?
Boy, Dave, you covered a good chunk of that. That's all real important topics, and you know, a lot of the comments is, has ever done this before? Yes. How long? How high? And, you know, the change in the dynamics, and basically, what do I do now?
I like that. Wayne Nelson, anything to add?
I guess the only thing I might throw in is what will happen with the election, because I'm not sure, and I don't think anybody, the people I'm talking to don't know. A lot of talk about whether the equity markets will take a hit or rebound after the election's over.
So we have what, who, when, why, and how. Very nice. We're covering the journalistic basis for the day. Mark Russell, how about you? Anything to add?
The only thing that I would add specifically on the wheat side would be just really keeping a close eye on Russian weather here for the next few weeks. Australia as well, because those are two big producing countries that are going to be important over the coming months and going to impact price. So,
well, I want to start with you because I put you into the rotation today. I called checking for somebody who dealt with soft red winter wheat in particular from the Andersons, because you have such a footprint across the eastern Corn Belt. Of course, you're in Overland Park because it's where the trading office is. But you're covering soft red winter wheat, and I'm wanting to know whether you believe that there will be more winter wheat. And I've heard this may be the case in parts of Ohio, Indiana, and even in southern Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a couple factors that I believe are going to result in an increase in soft red winter wheat acres. I think one of them is price. Obviously, we're seeing a really good price compared to the last few fall planting seasons. And I think the farmer has done a good job. I mean, in our system, we are seeing hedges and cash sales go in here as futures have rallied above $6. And I think that is prudent. And I think you've also seen the bean harvest come off relatively quickly and early, which has just set the farmer up in a good way to get soft wheat planted.
Will these be double crop acres mostly?
I think some of them are going to be double crop. I mean, if you look at the price of beans, one of the major ag universities came out recently and said the wheat double crop bean economics were really good for this coming year. But I think in the core soft wheat belt, Ohio, Michigan, parts of Indiana, Illinois, I think there's going to be some wheat that's just able to stand on its own with prices where it's at.
That's Mark Russell. He's a soft wheat merchandising manager for the Andersons. We'll have more with Mark, Wayne Nelson, Kurt Kimmel, and Dave Chatterton in just a moment.